Welcome back to Music's Journey podcast, where you can hear more about the artist, the band, and the lyrics and music. I am your host, Kim Sear. Before I jump into my interview with Jamie Warren, there's a few things that I would like to go over first. If you enjoy today's show, please consider leaving us a rating and a review. The more positive the rating, the easier it is to find the show, and it really helps to grow the community that we are developing here. If you are somebody new who has recently found our podcast, welcome. Please make sure that you subscribe and stay tuned to our future episodes. Please take a screenshot of this particular episode and post it to your Instagram story. Tag Music Journey Podcast and Now and Then Magazine. I will feature you on the next podcast. So without further ado, here is my interview with country artist, multi-award winner, Jamie Warren.
It's time to get behind the lyrics, the music, and the artist. You're listening to the Music's Journey podcast, brought to you by NowAndThenMagazine.com, your music and entertainment online magazine. I'm John Marshall. With your special guest, here's your host, Kim Sear.
Welcome back to Music's Journey podcast. My very special guest today is regarded as one of the most awarded independent country artists in Canada, with multi-awards with the Junos, CCMA, OCMA, and over 59 singles in his career, with 9 studio albums, including the Greatest Hits album in 2004. What? Jamie is back. He is back with his first new single, Cows and Corn, off of his upcoming 10th studio album. Welcome to the show. Yay.
Whenever I hear that term, I automatically think of Mr. Cotter.
Mr. Cotter.
I grew up with that joke. Welcome back.
You can sing it well.
Thank you for the intro.
Well, we were going to tease you about your golf, but I'm going to get into that right now. So, are you just such a happy man with golf and your beautiful new bride, Ange, and Tim Hortons in your hand?
Pretty much. You almost got all my happy points. Oh. Happy places right there.
Which did I miss?
You didn't really go into depth there. So there may also be an alcoholic beverage on the cart behind us.
True.
Those are my happy places. And I was really kind of pumped when Doug Ford let us go back golfing.
I guess.
Because the weather's been really nice.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures of you guys out there. I hear Ange is kicking your butt.
This little course that we play just on the edge of Dutton, where we live, she's been getting really good. Like, she's a ring it player, a ball player. So naturally, she's got a great swing. And it might be a hair unorthodox at times, but it's a really solid swing. And so she's been beating me at least on the first hole. And in this case, she was ahead on after two. So, I'm doing my best to keep up.
See, it might not be as enjoyable if she's going to be beating your butt.
No way! I think that'll be fun.
The challenge is on.
Well, if you're a competitor at all, and have you ever played in the scramble tournaments, right? Mm-hmm. Is that if you have a lady who can hit a ball 200 yards or longer, mm-hmm. the cool thing is they will get to hit from the red tees. So if you have a lady on your team that's a good golfer, I would suggest to anybody with a scramble team, add a young lady to it. Because she gets hit from the red tees. That's all I'm saying.
See?
Yeah.
Are you guys going to be playing for Jason Blaine's golf tournament?
You know, Blainer reached out to me. I think it was like the first year he started doing that. And I unfortunately couldn't do it that year. And I haven't really been able to do it since then. I think that part of it with Blaine is that, you know, he knows I can beat him, so he probably doesn't invite me to his tournament.
That's not what he said last night.
And it's funny, you know who is a pretty good golfer? Because this goes back to old tournaments, right, in the early, mid-90s. Mm-hmm. Bamford. Bamford hits a pretty good ball.
Yeah, he said that. He did say that.
Yeah, and so there's a couple of golfers. But that's the irony of our business, is that there does not seem to be that many musician singers that are also good golfers.
Did Aaron go out with you that first year?
Which Aaron?
Aaron Pritchett.
Oh, no. Did he hit a good ball?
Yeah, apparently. He does, too.
Because see, Aaron Lyons. Now there's a really good golfer. Can I tell an Aaron Lyons story? We were set up with him. This is before he had any singles, and it was in Edmonton. It was an Alberta Country Music Association tournament. Mm-hmm. And so we were put together with this young kid. And I remember him calling me Mr. Warren. I said, well, you can stop that right now. It's Jamie. Like, I'm going to say Aaron was probably 20 at that time. And, oh, my God. Like, he's a hockey player, too. He had a great ball. And so he told me he's living on he's spending a lot of time in Nashville and living on a producer's couch. And he never told me who the producer was. And then, and so I got to know him, and he was very understated, which I had a great deal of respect for. And then all of a sudden he popped up within 6 months, with his first hit song. And I didn't realize it was Chris Farron's couch that he was sitting on.
Oh, wow.
Down in Nashville. Yeah. And we've written a couple songs together, Aaron and I, over the years. And he's a talented guy who just kind of took a rest from the business.
The pool of talent here in Canada is absolutely crazy. And a lot of the players are hockey players. Like, a lot of the artists are hockey players or ex-hockey players like you.
Yeah, well, see, now, and see, you brought it up. And usually if you were a hockey player, you would think you would swing a golf club in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where, but yeah, Bamford's a hockey player as well.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Ask him about that.
Or if you're a Leaf player, golfing would begin in the springtime.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, so tell us about the pandemic and how it's affected your outlook on life. And has it changed your creativity and your writing?
Well, the fact that I'm having a beer and it's 9 in the morning. Is that bad?
Maybe so.
Maybe,
okay. We might join you.
I hope Ange isn't listening. I'm totally joking. No, you know what? How it's changed is, in some ways, like Rick and I, we've worked together, Rick Hutt, my producer, for almost 40 years. And it's sort of one of those things where we get together every Wednesday and record music. Mm-hmm. We've been doing that for about 4 years. And the savior for me is that hasn't changed, with the exception of about a four-week period with a severe lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there every Wednesday, and some days with masks on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's given me something to do. And it also sort of coincided with I had some things to say, I guess, as an artist again. So I mean, has the pandemic helped the creativity? I wouldn't necessarily correlate those two things, but it's given me time to focus on it. I certainly miss playing live. I'm looking forward to doing that soon.
What about, though, like, a lot of the artists talk about how much it's changed their perspective, I guess, because, you know, being on the road and touring and being able to balance the family life, and then all of a sudden they're at home, and it's just like they draw a complete blank, and it took them like 6 and 7 months just to be able to even be able to write a song. It's like they were really at a standstill in their creativity. And I don't think that's affected you the same way, right?
Well, see, it's fascinating because I think what we all bump our heads into is our routines.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute the routine changes, then it you don't always react properly right away. It takes a while to sort of accustom to it, right? And so my routine, in all honesty, has been that you get out and you play during the summer, right? And so normally my writing time every year has been the middle of January through to May.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my core writing. I write with people, other artists, you know, 2, 3, 4 days a week. And then I kind of don't write for a while because I'm touring, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing live. And even right up until the fall. Now, occasionally I'll have writing sessions with other people and I'll collect ideas on my phone, but I don't actually sit down to write unless it's that downtime.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sort of sharing with the artists that if they're used to touring, because that's summertime, and some artists tour more than others, and then you'll have your set time. It's like, okay, the record company says we need an album, and then you start writing for an album. And sometimes the business does work that way, and we are programmed as artists to do that. We're always somewhat creative in writing, but we'll have our, you know, our patterns. And mm-hmm. so that can really, and so then, yeah, and then your creativity does get stifled a little bit because it's like, well, I don't write during this time frame, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do I do, Kim? What do I do?
I know. I've been hearing it a lot.
Right. Yeah. So what's happened with me is my pattern hasn't maybe changed quite as much as other folks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was been my, you know.
What advice? You know, my saving grace. What advice would you give? You know, as like independent artists that might just be starting out today, or, you know, maybe an artist that's been at it a while and find themselves struggling?
It's a tricky one. I mean, it does come down to economics. And so that for me to answer that question straight out, I'd have to talk to, you know, the emerging artists, the new ones, or the iconic artists to see where they're sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you always have to make sure that you can pay the bills,
mm-hmm.
As well as be creative. Sometimes in our careers, we have the opportunity to do both at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would want for the younger artist and the iconic artist. And so that, I'd start with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that is what I'd also say is figure out, you know, what you can sell. And I use a word that probably will catch people off guard, but the business that we're in is that business. And so as you're being creative, it's being able to sell something should not affect your creativity. And where I'm going with that is, what is your demographic?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've said this before to you in an interview, is that, you know, as a 25-year-old artist, I'm writing songs for teenage girls, right? And then as a 35-year-old male artist, I could be writing songs for teenage girls.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a 55-year-old artist, well, that's starting to get creepy. And so, right? And but the point, yeah, I do that for the laugh. So here's the point of the story, though, is when you were 25, you were writing for 15-year-old girls. You're now 55, so why don't you write for 45-year-old girls,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Same demographic that you wrote for. Now, the trick is that, unfortunately, the advertisers never want our demographic.
Mm-hmm.
The advertisers always want teenage to mid to late 20s,
mm-hmm.
right? They want newbies. And I could explain why, but I don't want to embarrass that demographic. But I'll do it the other way around, is that when you get to be older-ish like us, is that... You don't buy six cases of beer a week. You don't buy a car because it looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're careful with our money on our bigger purchases. So anyway, that made you laugh. But anyway, that's the thing, is that, so find who would like to hear your music.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes people don't focus on that demographic, and there's a void there.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to create your own shows. Maybe an agent isn't interested in you. So then you have to figure out a way to book the show yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You have to figure out a way, you know, to raise the money to create the recording, to start the whole process. And there's lots of social media, like brand new people that are getting into it, or people that have found that adventure/tool later in life. Reach out to those folks.
I know that, you know, when it comes to, like, when I was talking to Jason last night, he was talking about, it, like, the new journey that he's on right now at this stage of his life, you know, turning 40, and then he just
September.
Found...
Yep. Did you tell him that?
No.
Oh, come on.
No, I joked with him, but I talked to him about something else. But when he was...
Oh, okay. I'll send Jason a message.
When I was talking to him, you know, he was saying that I'm not sure, he wasn't really sure whether or not the records or ones that he thought were going to do really well with the new music that he's writing, he thought for sure, you know, he was so proud of it, and he thought it would do better. And it's hard for him not to look at the charts and see what's happening with it. And then I said to him, you know, when you look back and you're writing at this stage of your life, that's when the authentic person, like, you've always been a very authentic writer. And, you know, it's something that you know, everybody relates to. So it's just, it's easy and it's more simplified and not having to worry about writing for the radio stations. And, you know, he's had a bit of problem struggling with that. But I think, I said to him last night, his music right now is, I think, the best he's ever sounded.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what he's writing, and just write for the sake of writing because you love it. And, you know, you love what you're putting out. This is the stage that you're at, the journey in your life. And, you know, so he's just such an amazing talent. And then just seeing that difference, you know, when it's worrying about the radio stations anymore and stuff. At this stage, you can't. And, you know, I think it goes to the digital platforms for the fans, because the more that we, you know, talk to the fans and say to them, listen, it's in your ballpark now. It's not the radio stations that are in control anymore. It's not about just getting a record on the radio station. You can, they'll only choose one. Same thing when it comes to certain platforms. They'll choose one out of your group of work off that album or whatever, and that's the one that they hone in on, and that's the one that they promote. But if fans listen to it and we keep playing it, like on podcasts like this and other shows, you know, the fans can get to hear that music, and they might have missed it, right? They get to hear it now, and then they can add ratings to it, and, you know, they click 5-star, or they can like it. The more that they do that and share it with fans, their own fans and friends and playlists, it makes all the difference in the world with the awards that are going out right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if you wanted to candy coat it for them, that's fine. I mean, it's just, I can say that it's over. You know, you're 40, man. Come on. No, that was that. What you said, Kim, was very to the point and smart. You know, because what if you're going to have a career for 40, 50 years? You know, there's going to be peaks and valleys. There's going to be, and I love valleys and ups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't mean that you suck or it's awful. What it means is that tastes change, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's in at radio, and if you can stay authentic, as you know, you'll find that base of people that mm-hmm. you're talking about. And what has changed is social media. You're so true.
Yep.
It's like there's other avenues to introduce a different genre of music or something a little off the beaten path. Now mm-hmm. the trick is you're not maybe going to generate the same huge dollars that you might the normal route.
Mm-hmm.
However, that doesn't mean you can't still pay the bills and keep your authenticity and just hang in there until,
you hit play, that song.
Yeah, let's play that again.
Yep.
And that happens, you know, and that's just sort of the reality of the business, right?
I think that's the secret to your career, because you've got the pulse on your own music and you write for you. And I've never met anybody more grounded in the business than you. And, you know, to be doing it this length of time and have the fan base that you do, and every single record that comes out does well. You got an incredible, incredible body of work.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that, because it to me, if the things that I do, I'm an entertainer, I'm a singer, I'm a songwriter.
Comedian.
Thing that means, if I'm ranking those things, songwriting comes first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like I am a singer-songwriter, and the stories that I tell and in the way that I tell them, you know, I've been affected by other writers, I've been inspired by other writers, I've had great mentors my entire life that the information they've shared with me has stayed. This is something that sort of, it is connected.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to the radio all the time. I always have in my car. I flip around like crazy. It drives Angela a little nuts, but you know, and what I'm doing is enjoying country music, but I'm doing research.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for new chord changes. I'm looking for a new, oh, that's kind of neat. You know, that's pretty boring in the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty boring in the same. Oh, that's, you know, and so
here's horns, here's, you know, there's different stuff, and piano.
And what I've done in songwriting classes is that, and I use this line to get a laugh and to get their attention, is I said, the first thing you got to learn to do is steal. That's it. You got to look. And that's what I want, is the laugh, but that gets their attention. And I'm going, okay, stealing. You can't take more than six notes. That's the rule. But what you're doing is you will hear a cool, drum loop. Mm-hmm. You'll hear something interesting from a production element. I'll hear a chord change. And I went, wow, I haven't used that in a long time. And I think it's also important to sort of have a sense of what the competition, that came out wrong, but what radio is thinking, right? Here's mm-hmm. what, if I'm going to release something and they may decide whether to play it or not, I know what I'm dealing with.
You know what's working right now. Yeah.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean that you present something just like the other artists that are on the radio. Mm-hmm. It just, at least you've gone in with your eyes open. I mean, here's another thing of life, and we go back to Jason and the 40 years old. I was working with a friend of mine, Carol McCartney. This is going back like jeepers, 15 years ago. And she was releasing her first record at 40 years old, and she's going, I'm really worried, you know, I'm 40, and I, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, Carol, look at me. You're 40 years old. It's over. Let it go. And she was really shocked at first, right? But then she started to laugh. And I'm going, that's the point. It's kind of like, you can't do anything about that. So throw it out the window. You sing well. We've got some really cool tunes. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see what'll happen. So don't let that, you know, type you down and pull you back. And the other thing too is another analogy is the glass half empty or half full.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one in my industry arts classes or songwriting classes. I go, well, I get the answers, you know, well, half full, half empty. I said, I can guarantee you it's half empty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you're going to do is you're going to accept that, and your first song to the publisher is going to suck. Your second one's going to suck. You're going to go in there, and I'm going to make sure you have three or four songs ready when your one big song is your presentation, and he goes, eh. And it's kind of like, I'm going to make sure that you're prepared and you understand that it is half empty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's all cry, let's all boo-hoo-hoo, let's all get that negative crap out of our systems, you know, because it's life. I didn't create it. Let's go boo. Okay, now, are you guys done crying? All right. So the glass... Let's go see if we can make the glass half full. Let's mm-hmm. see if we can find the positive to that. But mm-hmm. let's at least deal with the pragmatic, realistic thing that exists.
Yeah. Right?
And I like to get a couple laughs too. But, and then the end of that parable is there's so much debate over whether the glass is half empty or half full. It's the same amount of water.
Mm-hmm.
It is just spin. Right?
Whoa.
It's just, what do you call it? And so people spend time debating the amount of water in the glass, it evaporates and nobody gets to drink it. So who cares if it's half empty or full? Just drink the water.
Well, the thing too, I think, that artists and everybody does in life is without the ups and the downs, we don't better ourselves. We would just be monotone. There would be no expression, no creativity. Being able to be down gives you that, hey, pushes you a little bit harder. It pushes you out of your comfort zone, and you start doing things that you never thought you were capable of. And I think without that, you know, songwriting wouldn't be the same.
I agree. Well said, Kim. I mean, you need perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't have to be drastic perspective, but sometimes it does.
Yep.
I'll give you an example about my songwriting, and I've shared this with other people too. Sometimes writing a personal song while you're in the moment isn't the best time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you need...
Come out the other side.
If you can understand it and give it some time to sit, it ends up being less emotional but more...
Clear.
Yes, clearer story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I agree. I mean, if writing is what soothes your soul in a difficult time, I mean, pick up the guitar. I would never not do that.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it takes a while to tell a story. Like, I didn't finish it with a song, but, you know, Do You Think of Me? My song that Carrie and I wrote for our fathers.
Mm.
And my dad had been passed for, I think, 5 years before I wrote that song. I
wow.
I wasn't sure I wanted to say something, but I wasn't sure what it was that I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. And Carrie's dad passed away. And then I had this little guitar part, and it was like, okay, I think it's time to write this song.
Mm.
But that song, I had the idea of the song, mm-hmm. but I just didn't say it for 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. And it becomes, it, like, you know, the legacies that we have in life and the journeys and points that we have, you know, there's so much information there that you can write off of. And, you know, your personal experiences, your losses, your highs, you know, but it's just making sure that you're walking through that pain and see that we got grandbabies.
We got
grandbabies.
Oh, did you hear that in the background?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sitting outside. It's our dog.
Oh.
And so in the backyard, all the kids come by, and she plays on this side of the fence to get all the kids to pet her. So that's what's going on.
So another dog on the podcast.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't know. I'll move back inside.
That's funny.
playing with the crew. Oh.
Just going, don't take the dog.
Yeah.
Don't take the dog.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, she's totally friendly. You can keep the ball.
That was funny.
So do you want me to come inside? Here, I can.
That's better.
I didn't realize.
Well, we couldn't hear a whole, like, we couldn't hear you too when there was so much of the kids in the background.
What happened was there was four young kids that started playing with her, and that's probably when you heard all the voices.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. We had Mocha barking yesterday during Jason's. That's okay. Now, you've been so busy writing and working on your 10th CD. Now, the very first single that you've released, talk about this one, because I know that you co-wrote this with Carrie. Choosing this song as the one, it could be rural life anywhere across Canada, you know, many places. So
yeah, it's sort of, in some ways, a follow or a connection with One Step Back for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in Grey Bruce County, Hanover. I was considered, this makes me kind of laugh, I was considered a city kid.
Wow.
Well, and there's some irony to that, right? Population 4,500.
That's a big city.
And the business, well, yeah, whoa. And, you know, part of the funny thing is that I was on a haying detail when I was 14 because all the farm kids didn't want to work for their dads during the summer.
Mm.
So they made sure they applied for the in-town gigs, like at the pharmacy and all the... city kids, I'm doing my quoting fingers right now, would go and work for the farmers for the summer. I thought that was hilarious. But it is the song, like, we used to gravel run, and crop touring was what is another version of it, but in a different region of Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on where you grew up, you might know one or the other. But it's the exact same thing. It's driving, gravel running, crop touring, you're looking at crops as you're driving, is your back road driving.
Hmm.
And usually, and so you have to be careful with this, in the old days, there was probably a group of people in a car with a case of beer,
mm-hmm.
and you may or may not have, I'm saying it again, drank half the case of beer on the back roads driving around, and then the other half of the case of beer at the fire, which was either at, you know, for us, Allen Park at the conservation area, or there was a couple of cool gravel pits, and that was small town Friday or Saturday night. That's what you did.
You're smuggling people into the drive-in in your trunk and all that kind of stuff.
Oh my God! Yeah,
the pig roast.
I didn't even mention that. Yeah, the drive-in. That was another destination on every long weekend. They would hire an off-duty police officer because it wasn't technically in Hanover, right? It was just on the edge of town. And so this OPP officer would walk around, and we would park in the back three rows, and that's where the party, like, you brought lawn chairs. Like, it was literally a walk-around party, and his job was just to make sure that it wasn't rowdy. He just was, he kept
Jamie,
it under control.
Nah.
Yeah.
Jamie, nah.
Yeah. Yeah, you reminded me. That was the, you know, on long weekends, that was the extra cool thing to do.
Well, that'll lead into my burning questions portion later at the show.
Okay.
For sure. Okay, so what was it like writing with Carrie on this song? And talk to us about that writing session.
Well, see, it's interesting because when I came to Carrie, a part of it was connected to a next step from One Step Back, pardon the pun. And so I had this chord progression, and I had crop touring and gravel running. I wanted to talk about that. And so that's really how that song started and evolved. With Carrie, see, Carrie didn't really grow up in a small town.
She was more like me.
Like I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but in the same breath, the whole, you know, to get outside during the summer, as that generation, she could totally relate to. And we can all relate to, you know, usually somebody found a fire somewhere. Now, the irony to this, the hook line is I had cows and corn, and everybody who hears it goes, I want to hear him sing that, right? It's like, really, cows and corn. Boy, that sounds pretty easy to sing. And that's why in the song I'm sharing with you is at the end, it's blah, 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 cows and corn, right? Like, it's not like cows and corn. Like, no, it's just at the end of the thing. Because it's also very country. Sometimes people hear that and go, one of those songs. It's like, no, you got to hear the whole song.
Because there's so much more to it, and it's about the love story too, and about the girl and the whole. It's such a great song. I absolutely love this song. So we're gonna play it right now, and we're gonna come back to the conversation. So let's play "Cows and Corn" by my very special guest, multi-award winning country artist Jamie Warren, here on Music's Journey.
That was Friday. Showered up and chores done. 17 and looking for fun. First date, I picked you up in my daddy's car. Back roads, crop tour and gravel running. For sure we always got her done in time to make it to the fire. Where we light it up and burn it down till the sun can steal the shine from the stars. Baby, close your eyes and let it go back to that place we used to be. It ain't that far. Where the crickets sing a song to who we are. Yeah, we'll always come back to cows and corn. I've had the sand between my toes, walked in the mountains when it snows, watched the sunset do its dancing on the lake. But baby, nothing can compare to the way you smile and stare at me flying down Side Road 28. And we light it up and burn it down till the sun can steal the shine from the stars. Baby, close your eyes and let it go back to that place we used to be. It ain't that far. Where the crickets sing a song to who we are. Yeah, we'll always come back. Cows and corn. Yeah, I can smell the fresh cut grass, man. Hear those church bells singing to me on Sunday. When I close my eyes, let it go back to that place we used to be. It ain't that far. We'll light it up and burn it down till the sun can steal the shine from the stars. Where the crickets sing a song to who we are. And baby, I promise you that we'll always come back to cows and corn. Raise your glass to your hometown. Never forget where you come from.
That is Cows and Corn, brand new for Jamie Warrens. He could also be listing for a brand new steakhouse. I like that idea. Dinner in a sign.
Oh, okay. Nice. This is something, too, that was sort of, I'm still probably going to do, and I was talking to Terry, there was no cows there. I want to do this little bit of me talking to a cow.
I got the perfect place.
I had this whole, like, back and forth with the cow doing nothing.
We can hook you up.
We can hook you up.
All right. There you go.
Can we ever hook you up? Like, they chase John around in circles. It's hilarious. Because I just watch them just corral him right into a circle. And then he's sitting down in the middle looking, picking grass blades. And they still nudge him from the back and nudge him from the front.
That's funny.
It was so funny. That's how we got some of our really fun pictures of those cows. But, yeah, we didn't have much to do that day, apparently.
No.
Cows can be okay.
Yeah,
you know,
they can.
Chicken. Oh, well, yeah, that's another thing. They're not mentioned. Sorry. Yeah, I grew up with chickens, but that's another interview question.
When you made the video for this, it was a lot of fun. Talk about the very special guests that you have in it, and obviously the cameo of your wonderful, beautiful bride. She's got to be for the Actor Award now, right?
Well, you know, this is the second one in a row, right? She did bring that up. So, what am I going to say? Oh!
No freebies for Jamie. No.
I know. See, right there. And that the beginning of it was Terry. Terry Odette came up with so this is a true phone conversation. It's going, how do you feel about, like, a farmer Clint Eastwood?
Oh.
And I went, okay, sure. And so he came up with that opening thing, right? And I thought he shot it in 4K, and he did a really nice job. And we had Arthur, his DOP, from all the other videos we did back in the old days.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was sort of fun. And I didn't know that 40 seconds that would open it, not necessarily would exist, but they'd be like that. And it was kind of a fun little, you know, other element to the video.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he'd like to do, and here's an inside scoop, is that for another video in the future, he'd like to bring back that young couple.
Oh.
And the question would be, what is the relationship that the couple has with me?
Mm-hmm.
I've had a couple people already ask.
Well, I was wondering it when I watched the video as well. I went, it's not them as they're younger. So
right.
You got to fill in the rest of the story.
Right. Well, see, and that was the original concept that I had pitched to Terry.
Mm-hmm.
And he had originally had a blonde girl and another guy.
I would have instantly thought that was you guys when you were younger.
Well, see, and they were, they looked kind of like us.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the original thought that it would be, you know, us looking at a younger version of us across the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, that's how video concepts often, you know, what's the reality, who's available. The COVID thing really complicated our circumstance, because then we also had to have a real couple,
mm-hmm.
You know, so that they can interact that close.
Yeah.
Without masks on. So I thought it's how the concept evolved. And I think it was kind of neat. They both look interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I thought
mm-hmm.
Terry picked a pretty neat couple.
Yeah, as I said, when we were watching the video, it's like, it's such a cool video. And I think so many people, like I said, can represent anybody in rural life almost anywhere in Canada. And so they're going to relate to the song, and it's such a catchy tune. And
thank you.
I think that, you know, you writing with producer Richard Hutt, who, you know, Ricky Ricordo on Facebook.
There you go.
He's so special, and he's such a special soul, but man, he's talented.
Oh, yeah. He's okay.
He's okay. Poor Richard.
Rick, as I said, we've worked together almost 40 years, because I mm-hmm. was actually, it could be because I was 20 years old when I met him.
Mm.
I'm 60 now. So there you go. Ta-da!
See? Okay.
And see,
it's
Rick
over.
Rick, yeah, whoa. But the cool thing is that there is this small town connection because Rick is from Palmerston.
Oh, I didn't know he was from Palmerston.
Yeah, and so so here's the story. I'm in Hanover, right, and I'm finishing up high school, and I'm going to go off to college to study broadcasting, and I'm talking to Richard Knechtel, Dick Knechtel, and he's one of the guys up in the Grey Bruce area, right? And he was based out of Walkerton, and so I made the drive, boarded my dad's car, and just talked to him a little bit about music, and he said, well, where are you going? I said, well, Kitchener, I'm going to go, and he said, okay, well, here. And he gave me the name of his buddy, which was Richard Hutt, at Cedar Tree Recording Studios, and he said he's in Kitchener. Look him up, and that's what I did. I phoned him, and then I went to the studio and met him, and then we started a working relationship, and that was just the Walkerton guy told me about the Palmerston guy. The Walkerton guy told the Hanover guy about the Palmerston guy while he was in Kitchener, and the rest is history.
Oh, you know, just watching that friendship and watching how talented he is and how many writers he works with. And, you know, same thing with Carrie, you know, just insane talent. And she can pull anything out of anybody. So just an amazing group of people that have been working on this one with you.
Oh, you're so true. Yeah, Rick's my pal and is ridiculously talented. And Carrie, well, she's my pal too. Great writer. And I've learned a lot from Rick, you know. We talked about songwriting and arrangements, everything from some chord progressions to thought processes. Rick really helped me with that. And there's been a couple of chords. I'll share a story with you that, you know, in the 80s, when I was in my 20s, you know, when Michelle Wright was doing the same thing and Prairie Oyster and these Canadian recording acts, heavy songs on the radio, what we all were doing were playing bars. Monday through Saturday with a matinee on two shows on Saturday across the country. That's what we did in the 80s because there weren't any festivals yet.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started doing that, like I literally, this is true, when I was working in Ontario, I would work Monday through Saturday, two shows on Saturday, right? I'd come back to, at that time, the London area, Belmont, and then I would drive to the studio on Sunday and spend Sunday in the studio. Then I'd be back on the road again on Monday. And after about a year and a half of this, I was saying to Rick, I don't know if I can keep coming to the studio, man, because I need some time off. And that's what he said to me. He said, well, okay, what you're doing in the bars is good. What you're doing in the bars is paying your bills. This thing you're doing in the studio, that's your career.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what you're doing in the bars is your job. What you're doing in the studio is your career. So never lose sight of that. And that's one of the lessons that I haven't forgotten. Rick's, I've got probably a handful of lessons from Rick that are kind of that interesting. But yeah, that got me through that. Because it was just a lot of work. I was tired. You know, it was just a lot of singing. And I did that for 5 years, 51 weeks a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of singing. But it's what you do when you're in your 20s.
Your voice is just gotten better and better. And it's usually the other way around. Everybody gets nervous, you know, about being able to hit the notes and things like that. Your voice is just that beautiful pocket that we recognize your voice instantly the moment it comes on radio.
Hmm. Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, that, thank you for saying that. There's a couple things to mention with that is that, you know, sometimes with pop, yaller, country music, what happens is, there was a time when being unique or authentic sounding was a way to get a record deal,
mm-hmm.
right? It was a way to succeed. And now it's not, there's still some amazing voices. Don't get me wrong on the statement, but sometimes it's a good news, bad news. The good news is you have a very authentic voice. The bad news is, you got an authentic voice. you're not going to do well on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for the compliment. And I suggest to any artist that I deal with these days is to have an authentic voice is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And if that's what you've got, then let's work with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately you will stand longer than the person that doesn't have an authentic voice. That's my opinion.
Yeah, 100%.
And the other thing too I'd add is I've always been curious about studying what it is that I do. And so, like, if you ask a guitar player, what kind of guitar do you like to play? Blah, blah, blah. What kind of strings do you play? Blah, 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 this brand. Blah, 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 blah. What kind of amp? This blend with this configuration. Blah, blah, blah. Ask a singer, so what mic do you use? Oh, I don't know. Okay, well, how do you do warm-ups? Oh, I know, I just, you know, kind of la, la, I'm good. You know, it's like, oh, okay. So I try to make sure that singers also realize that they have an instrument.
Exactly.
And if you talk to anybody else in the band, they know what they do. They know the best things to use. And so I studied the bel canto technique, which was Ed Johnson out of Alora. It's a vocal technique. It helps sustain the durability of your voice, and it takes the pressure off certain elements. Every vocal technique will lift the back of your throat, move your voice forward, and present it on the front of your face. And that helps with the tone. But what it does, and you breathe diaphragmatically. Ironic that we're doing this on radio is announcers have a tendency to, hey, how you doing? Well, that is easier on your throat than, hey, how you doing? Believe it or not. And so the power and structure. Anyway, I'm just saying to singers, you should pay attention to your instrument that you have and make sure that you keep it as long as you can. And, you know, the same reason you go for walks or you stretch or you work out. You just try to keep it there.
I know that a couple of the artists that we've had come on have that super growly, bluesy voice. I'm going, man, after like, if you played like a week of shows back to back each night, I can't even imagine what their vocal cords would feel like.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, remember I told you about the studio on Sundays, and you know, for years I also did jingles, you know. Get your news and more, watching your door, the Kitchener Waterloo record. Anyway, so what I was doing, Kim, on Sundays was going somewhere to a studio, And so, as I told you, singing six nights a week, and if you talk to me on Sunday on the phone, I'm telling you, man, hey, how's it going, Kim?
Oh, it's man, like, I can imagine.
Right? And then you go to the new place on Monday, and you wouldn't hit all the high notes on Monday or Tuesday, unless Tuesday was ladies' night. But you wouldn't hit, right? And you paced yourself so you could last the six nights. And the other time when you turn it on was if a manager or agent came in the bar. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, good for real. And so you pace yourself. And I had to warm up, I'm telling you, to do the jingles on Sunday. There were times where I would be humming in the shower, having the longest shower ever for the steam, right? Mm-hmm. And just trying to get a voice, not a great voice, just something that would come out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. I feel for those artists that do so many shows.
Oh God,
you got to learn to pace yourself.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Are you okay to do the burning questions portion now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right. First one.
Okay. Can I add one more thing?
Sure.
If you want to use it? I don't know if you're familiar with this. Speaking of the, you know, talking with new artists and stuff like that, and connected to Rick Hutt, my ex's family is up in the Pembroke area. Mm-hmm. And so I was at a hockey game, and this guy came up to me and said, excuse me, are you Jamie Warren? And I said, my stock answer is, I don't know, do I owe you money? and so we had a chat, and he said he had this son, and could he give me a tape? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And we talked, and his son lived in Pembroke, and I said, he was in town. I said, why don't you have him come over to the house? We were staying at a family's house. And so this young 18-year-old came over and gave me a 8x10. His dad had already given me the cassette. Mm-hmm. We had a little chat, and that was Jason Blink.
Oh, and I was going to say, because he's from Pembroke. I wondered if that's what you were going to say.
Yeah. And so I brought the tape back, and see, Jason Berry was playing in my band at the time. And so Jason and Rick started working with Jason.
Wow.
And eventually Jason moved to KW. Mm-hmm. So I met him as an 18-year-old.
Oh, that's funny. Guy. That's funny because I know we were talking about it yesterday. We were talking about you and talking about quite a few of the guys like Shane and everybody that, you know, he hung around, and so many of them played in his band originally, and Jason, as you meant too. And so it's kind of cool to see you know, how much has changed and the longevity of everybody's careers, because, you know, that's a legacy all its own.
Well, see, and I think that is part of the industry. Is just that it's not just the connections, but it is a family. Mm-hmm. And there is begots, right? It's kind of like you'd be surprised who knows who, because at some point you will have connected. You know, you have written a song together. You'll end up playing the same show together. You might have been in the same band or had the same band members. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you stayed up till 5 a.m. at a CCMA room somewhere. That may or may not have happened.
Yep.
It's the 8 degrees of Jamie Warren.
8 degrees.
Usually some connections there.
Now, I know, like, when we were talking to Jason, but even Dan Davidson last night, you know, talking to him and going back to Dallas Smith when he was with Default, and, you know, for Dan starting out in rock and just all those, you know, friendships that, you know, intertwine and, you know, come out in the end. And it's just incredible that journey that it takes you on, right, for music.
Oh yeah. And it's very, this is an awkward word, but it hopefully makes you laugh. It's very incestuous. It's kind of like, because again, you'd also be surprised the generational relationships that mm-hmm. happen. That they're the dads and the grandfathers, mm-hmm. and or the moms and the grandmothers were in the business as well. It sort of a family business. It doesn't mean that you're going to ultimately make the NHL, mm-hmm. right? But you're going to be a hockey player if your dad was a professional hockey player, or played hockey. I often use a mechanic. You know, if your dad's a mechanic, it does not mean that you will become a mechanic, even though the chances might go that way. Mm-hmm. But I guarantee you that you can fix a car.
That's true.
I can guarantee it. You know how to do more than just change the tires. And so that, and again, that's the same thing that happens with the generational musicians. Mm-hmm. And often, what I often think is funny too, is who you knew as a young person, or who you competed with as a 12, 13-year-old at the Grey Bruce competitions, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like going to Aiton to the beer fest or going wherever. It's sort of fascinating, the people that you end up connected to. I have some funny stories. I have a problem with fiddle players.
Oh, poor Shane.
Oh, no, here's the thing. I hope this makes you laugh. So in terms of, I was a kid, I was 5 years old, and I would ride my bike with this kid across the street who was also five, okay? We were best of friends for 3 years. My dad would come over and bring his guitar, and my buddy's dad would play the fiddle, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, but I'm 5 and 6, and it's like, Jesus, this is boring, it was boring, you guys always get... And I think my dad would bring the bottle of rye over, and they'd have this little sort of hoot nanny in their basement every once in a while.
Hoot nanny.
So, okay, so the name of the guy who was with my dad and my buddy was Beckett.
Mm.
Well, it was Stan Beckett.
Wow.
It was the guy who started the whole family. Like, now you got Lindsay and Tyler, right? Who would be the kids of my buddy who I rode bikes with. Then next door to me were the Mightons. And then Dan Mighton, who's a really well-known Grey Bruce fiddle player, his dad was Butchie. Well, Butchie was one of the three brothers that I grew up beside.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know if you've heard of the Scott Woods.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so his mom is Carolyn Woods.
Oh, gosh.
That's my godmother.
Oh, wow.
So that was my mom's best friend in high school going to Fergus. And as a kid, there's another place we'd stop by. And all. So Scott's a great musician, but his sister Kendra, who is my age, and then their older sister Elizabeth, man, they are great fiddle players. And so that was, we'd go to Fergus and we'd have a big music jam in their basement.
Wow.
So I'm surrounded by these fiddle playing families.
Well, it's funny because you just answered the first burning question.
Oh, okay.
You just answered it all right there, because I was saying, what is your favorite memories growing up in a small town in Hanover?
Well, jeepers. I would have to say smell of grass and playing backyard tag with my friends. We had hide-and-seek tag, and we would play it in an entire block of the neighborhood. Nobody had fences. And I can remember, you know, the smell of grass as you were hiding, like literally sort of fetal position, hiding on the corner in between houses in the grass and playing that game. That memory is going to be part of a book that I write, but that always comes to my, if I had to pick a specific memory.
Okay. What is your favorite campfire song?
Well, I think, can it be a dirty one?
Sure. See, I perked right up there.
The only reason, I was a camp counselor, and for a while, as a young teenager, the only one that comes to mind is, "Roll me over in the clover, roll me over, lay me down and do it again." Anyway, that maybe wasn't one when we sang the younger kids, but that's my... I didn't want to say that out loud, but that was what was coming to my mind when you asked that question. I said, should I really sing that?
Yeah, you just did.
Yeah, I did. Okay.
You just did. Okay, what was what song was Katie's favorite for you to sing to her as she was growing up?
Okay, so...
Anything by Jason McCoy.
Jason McCoy, I forgot about that. I forgot about her crush on Jason.
Yeah. That was... Okay, there's two stories. One is that when Katie was... like, I was Mr. Mom with Katie. And so... but she, whenever she would hear my song on the radio or whenever she would hear me play, she would totally start crying. Like it was an instant like, no, don't. And so I had to wait for me to go and write songs. I had to wait till she had her afternoon nap and I'd go down in the basement and play my guitar. This lasted, I swear, for about a year and a half until she came around to whatever it is that Dad did. I don't know. It was just, so the answer is none. And then, of course, the story John was alluding to, she was in the Jason McCoy fan club, whatever.
Yeah. Whatever.
Like, I was certainly not the most, you know, loved and recognized male country singer, Canadian country singer in our household. It was Jason McCoy. and then later when she was like about 14 and she needed her braces put in, I said, why are you calling McCoy? Apparently, maybe he paid for them. Apparently, your most favorite, just saying. But I just did that for a laugh. Gracious, whatever.
Who was your crush, you know, that you liked in music when you were younger?
Whoa. Well, I know who my crush is right now, and Ange is aware of this. It's Sheryl Crow. And now, see, I can't really say Sheryl Crow is older than me. I think we're about the same age. But I'm yeah, that's a huge crush. I mean, she plays bass as well as writes all the songs. She plays all the instruments. I mean, and she is an attractive lady, but there's something, like, she's just super-duper talented. So,
she's awesome.
That's my one crush.
Okay, so do you remember what movie was your first movie ever to take Ange to?
Oh, I don't.
Ooh.
But there's a funny story.
He's getting out of this one.
No.
He's backpedaling now. I don't remember.
Bring up a classic movie from our generation, right? And she won't have seen it. I'm learning that she didn't spend, you know, the amount of time watching television and movies like I did. Is that she was like either playing a sport or working or, you know, and so there's a lot of iconic movies that we all, like, who didn't see that movie? Well, Ange. and then there's also another bit of a joke is that, we pick a movie to watch together at the house and it's like, she probably will be asleep about a third of the way through the movie.
I was about to say.
And so she's just not a movie person. So for me to, like, I probably would have taken her to, you know, a dinner and where there was live entertainment. That's more than a movie.
Okay, here's a good one. Did you use a pickup line with Ange, and what was it?
How you doing? You know what? This is a true story, but I was married and she was married. And so didn't even know where Dutton was. And so Tim Fisher was our connection. So I was actually doing the show for Tim. And so it was at the health center. And so she was one of the people that I was introduced to. Now, she was an attractive blonde girl, and it was like, hi. And so what I did was, well, I sang One Step Back. I take one last look through Angie's bedroom window. And I did that to embarrass her, right? Like, that's part of the playing with the staff, right? I'm just sort of, and she got a little red and blah, blah, blah. But that was just, that was the first time I met her. And there was nothing, like, as I say, we were both married to different people, and it was just, you know, that's my thing, right?
I've never seen him trip over words before like he is right now.
Yeah, you tease somebody that's in the staff, right? You pick on them. That's part of my shtick.
It's part of your shtick. Favorite board game or game to play with family and friends?
Well, there's a story that connects with Angela. And
did Ange just walk in the room?
I don't know if Crokinole.
I love that game. I love that game.
Yeah, and so my family grew up playing Crokinole, mm-hmm. My grandfather had three Crokinole boards made, and my parents had one. All the siblings and my two uncles had a board, and so there was a fourth one that belonged to Grandma and Grandpa, which they eventually gave to me. After they passed away, or after my grandpa passed away. And so that was Angela's Christmas present the year we started dating.
That's nice.
She was a big Crokinole player.
That's nice.
And so that was kind of, it is a real board. It's a special,
Yeah, that brings back so many memories for me and my family too. So that's such a special gift.
Oh, it was, and it kind of sealed the deal. It was like,
that's what did it.
This guy kind of likes me.
Okay, who is the funniest person that you've ever worked with?
Okay, so I'm going to say Steve Fox. Steve Fox is probably one of the most dry-witted people I've ever worked with.
Okay.
He doesn't always show it to the audience, but off stage. He's pretty hilarious.
Cool. Okay. Now, most useless talent that you have?
I think they're all useful. I don't have any.
Okay. Of course, you don't have one.
Right there. Useless talent I have. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I'm lacking talent. Whether any of the talents I have are useless. So Ange would probably say my gift of gab.
Do you make any noises, impersonations, tricks?
Oh, do I? Oh, yeah. Oh, you want me to show them to?
Yeah. Give me an impersonation.
Well, see.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Okay, speaking of Ange again, is that I have a tendency, I talk out loud. I have a tendency to sing, like, you know, just stuff. And so I'll be like Lacey, I get my guitar
like
and playing songs and stuff like that, and go, I'll create a song. Oh, Lacey, baby Pacey, get on down, come on, I'll call you Stacy. You know, it's just sort of like, and I sing to the dog, and I sing to just stuff. And I am, you know, talented at diaphragmatic breathing, which I'm sure you're. John is as well, because he is a radio announcer.
He's just looking at me with his eyes crossed, going, what?
Yeah, and if you have the ability, let's say, how can I say this, of making noises, right? And one would be a burp. And some people make, like, little tiny burps, and some people can go, and see, that's a diaphragmatic burp, and that takes talent. And it takes practice. I have an ability to go,
ooh.
My tongue on the top of my...
It sounds so different on... I know what you were doing, but it sounds so different coming through the mics.
Well, I can do it. See, and that's
very
me
cool.
Just making noises.
Yep, that would be a useless talent.
See, now, remember, I did that on one tune. I don't know what it was, but do you remember, it was an old Alabama tune. Going down the backwoods, Tennessee back. There's like a...
Oh.
Like a little funny thing on the intro.
That's Dixieland Delight.
Oh, Dixieland, there you go. Yeah. So I can make noises with my bass. I can also whistle. I went to hockey school in Montreal as an 11-year-old, and I came back home. Did I learn anything about hockey? Yeah. But I learned how to whistle.
And give me the whistle.
Like, I mean, like, here, I better go outside to do this. You go like that. Like, you do the fingers over the tongue.
Yeah, I can't do that one anymore. I used to be able to. I don't know why I can't do it anymore. I have no idea.
Well, that's, again, so you picked it. So you got me on a roll here. I do make noises.
Okay. Huh. Talk about your favorite memory with your dad. Because you got a great photo of your dad on Facebook, of you and your dad.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. That's
yeah. A cool thing. But what's your favorite memory with him?
That's an interesting question because I haven't thought about that for a long time. I think with my dad, instead of picking a specific memory, which I've had a few, it was interesting. I would sleep in my hockey gear. I'm like a 5-year-old, right? And when you're that young, you're playing hockey, you're playing house league.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would play on Saturday mornings. And I remember I'd have to wake my dad up. Like, I had a little alarm clock, and it was like, oh, I'm going to say, because we played ridiculous, like at, 7:30 on a Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to be there. We had to be there at 6:45. So I had to go, dad, dad, what? Oh. my dad always had this, oh, that would be great. And I went, oh, I got to be careful what I say. Oh, yeah, oh, okay, yeah, okay, hang on. Oh, yeah, oh, good. That was my dad's tone around the house. Like, and he was a great guy. He was funny. He was like, but especially early in the morning, that was sort of the reluctant dad. Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
I had to go through that with my son, like 5:00, here we go, drive 3 hours in the snowstorm. It was every Saturday, Triple A hockey, gotta love it.
And that's a compliment to my folks, because I played a year junior when I was 14. I played a lot of ball, I played a lot of hockey, I played a lot of golf. And my parents were very supportive of mm-hmm. that, as well as my music. And so they went to all my games, they were part of the families that drove. And so it was, they were always a part of that, driving me to those talent shows that mm-hmm. I alluded to in the Grey Goose area. So they were very supportive that way, for sure.
That's amazing. I'm Kim Sear here on Music's Journey. I am talking with my very special guest, multi-award-winning Jamie Warren. Let's talk about Ange's book that just got released, an e-book that she's got out. And that what is it called? A Complicated and Beautiful Brain.
Yeah, it's a book about her understanding. Like, her studies have based around FASD, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder,
mm-hmm.
and that is her specialty, her background. And so that is what this book is about. Sort of explaining some things that people may or may not be aware of. And she's a pretty smarty pants kind of girl.
Yes, she is very talented and beautiful. You hit the jackpot with her.
Oh, I totally married up. It's like, have you ever seen the thing, with the letters behind people's names?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, come on, stop. It's like, this degree, this whatever. She's pretty smarty pants that way. And she also is, the one thing, too, is that she's incredibly dedicated to that particular cause.
Yes, she is.
It's a mental health issue, a mental illness issue,
mm-hmm.
Connected to an alcohol problem. And so she's just trying to help those that have it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's trying to make people aware that may not have it yet, right?
Well, knowledge is power, right? Knowledge is power. And, to be able to do preventative education out there is everything.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, I've been teasing her, too, because I said, now you're not the only professional writer in the house, or I'm not the only professional writer in the house. You got a book. And then that's, anyway, I like to tease her and say, oh, yeah, a book, whatever. I just do CDs. I don't have a book.
No competitive vibe in that house whatsoever.
Well, see, and the thing is, I'm really proud of her. And and I've told her that too. She's a really cool, like, she's very smart, but mm-hmm. she's a very dedicated individual.
Yeah, she's got a big heart
to helping people. You know, and the reason I try to make her laugh or I tease her is because it's like I told her, man, who else has written a book? That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, good for you.
Yeah, that's a huge deal.
And I think this is a very Canadian thing. I think sometimes we all, and I think it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have a tendency to go, well, yeah, you know.
Mm-mm.
Oh, come on.
Huge accomplishments.
Happy dance in front of the mirror. I'll leave the room. You know.
We have to get the two of you on TikTok and you can show her the happy dance.
I know. But she is going to hit me for that.
See, I'm trying.
but I believe that's important.
Absolutely.
Too, for people. You know, it's okay to feel, you know, take 20 minutes and sit in a room by yourself and smile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know what I mean? If you don't want to share it with other people and it makes you feel awkward, but
yeah.
It's okay. You know, good for you.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Absolute. I absolutely agree with you there. I want to remind everybody where you can find all the latest news for you and your music.
Mm-hmm. JamieWarren.com. Simple.
Okay. And I am asking all the fans out there, don't forget you can purchase this, share this, and play Cows and Corn on all of your playlists and streaming platforms, and request it at your local radio station if it's not being played right now. And don't forget to take a snapshot of this particular podcast and attach it to your Instagram story and tag Now and Then Magazine, Music's Journey Podcast, and Jamie Warren. And we will give you a shout out on our next podcast. Let's talk about your coffee talk. You're still doing that every week?
I haven't said this out loud, and I have to talk to Jess. Like, whether we just take a little, I think we usually do that as a break during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then reconnect in the fall. But yeah, it's been almost 2 years, I think.
I know. It's done really, really well. You guys have been amazing, you know, being able to move through all of this pandemic and everything and still, you know, be up there and give us some great entertainment and some great music. And we really love it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's fun. Jess is a cool, mm-hmm. a cool person.
Jessie T.
Yes.
Yeah, she's so talented. Now, do you have any shows coming up? I know you've got new music coming. Can you give us a hint about anything?
Well, the album itself, we're debating whether it'll be done, hopefully by the end of this year. And in terms of shows, we've got a show booked July 28th in Stony Plain, Alberta.
Oh, wow.
And the reason so it's set up COVID friendly, it's outdoors, and it's me acoustically. So the crowd doesn't have to be too large.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that will happen, and I'm hopeful that I can string a couple more shows out west together at that point in time. A lot of, and we've got to see that there's some shows that we can't really mention yet.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be shows, and what I'd say to the folks that are hopeful for that is hang in there, because I think we still have a few restrictions to get through, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you might see some last minute shows, even though they're not last minute, if you follow me.
Yep.
Is that, and I think that there's going to be opportunity to see live music in August and September.
Oh, that'd be so nice.
It won't be the big honking huge festivals, but you might. I think that there will be some entertainment for sure.
Well,
and
you know
I'll
what?
Be there.
We all need it, and I am so happy to be able to. Hopefully, John and I can get out there and see you play live, because that would just be such a welcome treat after this last year and a half. It's been a long one.
Well, thank you. I feel the same way. I would love to sing through a sound system and finish a song and have somebody applaud.
Oh God!
And,
well, here we go. Hang on. Wait. Well, we love you. We love you.
Ann's just getting tired of my joke. So,
Well, putting you and John together, that should be a relief for you both. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing a little bit about your life and your amazing new single, Cows and Corn. So we absolutely love you and cannot wait to see you play live. And we'll get together soon. Maybe we'll try golf, but you'll be very frustrated with me back on the first tee.
I don't get frustrated on the golf course. Nope.
John and I will be at the back. You guys will be way at the end. We'll be still starting on the first hole.
Play ahead.
I'll look forward to that.
All right. Thank you once again. Give Ange a big hug for us, and hopefully we'll see you guys
soon. Always great to talk to you guys.
Okay. You take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jamie.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Man, Jamie Warren, he is just a fountain of great knowledge and great music.
And stories.
And stories. You know, he's just amazing. Absolutely love him. So thank you once again to multi-award winning artist Jamie Warren for coming here on the show today. If you enjoyed today's show, please consider leaving us a rating and a review. The more positive the rating, the easier it is to find the show, and it really helps to grow the community that we are developing out here. We love bringing you the artists and the stories. If you are somebody who has recently found our podcast, welcome. We're really excited to have you here. Make sure you subscribe and stay tuned to our future episodes. To everybody listening, take a snapshot of this particular podcast with Jamie Warren and attach it to your Instagram story and hashtag Music Journey Podcast, Now and Then Magazine, and Jamie Warren. And I will feature you and give you a shout out in our next podcast. So thank you once again for having us into your home, and thank you for listening to us out there. We really appreciate each and every one of you. If you enjoyed today's show, you're going to love the ones that we've got coming up in our future episodes. We have Stereos, Pat Quarterback is going to be here, Mac London, The Heels, Weapons is back, and so many more. So we look forward to having you back. Once again, I'm your host at Music's Journey Podcast. I'm Kim Sear, and stay safe out there and enjoy the sunshine. We'll see you soon.
A great big thank you once again going out to Jamie Warren for chatting with us today on Music's Journey for his brand new single, Cows and Corn. The Music's Journey podcast is brought to you by NowAndThenMagazine.com. You can listen to all our podcasts on Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, Player FM, Deezer, TuneIn and Alexa, Podcast Addicts, and Podchaser. Our theme song is titled I Can Tell by the band Emergence. I'm John Marshall. On behalf of your host, Kim Sear, thank you for listening to Music's Journey.